All right, well, what I'm going to do now is just to move to the other side of the room here and give Patty a chance to tell us a little bit about her involvement with Baby Milk Action and how she came to be involved with this organization, a little bit of her history in the organization.
I picked up on one of the things you said, that it would be useful to find out a little bit about the people behind this particular thing. And one of the reasons I made that comment is that actually this isn't, we're talking about a movement, a social justice movement. And what you'll know about me, or what you'll know about Beverly or Hillary, is not really going to get you very far, because this is much bigger than any individual. And certainly, if you're talking about Nestle, we're talking about a huge corporation. If you're talking about my organization, you're talking about groups in well over 100 countries, you know, nearly 200 groups. And so each of those groups, people will come to it with very different experiences. But the interesting thing is that we're all united by one thing, that we want justice and social justice, and we don't want companies in the West. Certainly, I was born in Wales. I don't really want to tell you too much personal details, because it's something that I don't think is appropriate. I really don't want Nestle to know more than I would put in the public domain about my personal life, so forgive me if I don't really want to go into that. You can find out my father's a doctor if you want to, and you can find out that I worked as a painter. I was trained as an artist, something totally different than this. And I got drawn into this simply because a neighbour of mine actually told me about it. And I was horrified to think that our organisation, our companies based in the West, could be doing the sort of things that I saw in films and read about and all the rest. So I didn't have direct experience when I first came into this, okay? But I since have. I just felt that I had to do something, because I breastfed my own children and I knew about the pressures on women to breastfeed in a particular way and to time feeds and all the rest. I knew all about that. So it just clicked with me that somehow we have to stand up sometimes and say what we won't tolerate, because we were benefiting from all the taxes and all the sort of profit that was being made from selling these products. The wealth that is generated from these products come back to Europe. So I felt quite strongly about it, and felt it wasn't something that we could just literally say, you've got to do something over there. I mean, we knew that IBFAN actually was just starting. I started in 1980. IBFAN was very new. It only took off sort of late 70s, and the IBFAN organization the network that I belong to, really was formed 1980, 1981, which is when I first came in. So very, very much a new idea to have networks like this. So, how much more am I going to tell?
you've been involved really from the early 80s, have you?
Yes, but I mean, remember, if you look into the history, and all of you can go into the history books to find out how this started, because, I mean, we've got chronologies on our websites about, you know, you could trace it back to 1939, when Cicely Williams, a paediatrician, made that incredibly dramatic statement about the milk and murder statement that she made in Singapore, the Singapore Rotary Club, about sweetened condensed milk at that time, which Nestle was selling. And she called it murder, which is actually quite very strong language. So, because we move on from the 1939 through to all the different moves that people have made to try and sort of bring some order to marketing, but people didn't really understand about marketing. We don't really clicked about how penetrative and how dangerous marketing is. I still think people don't now. I think a lot of the attention that people are looking at now is mostly about work practices, and when they talk about social justice, it's giving people a decent wage. We're not actually looking at marketing and how that really can affect how people eat, what they decide to spend, what little money they have, on which products. Okay, so a lot of UN attention and a lot of things is about, because that what we're into now is growth and trade being everything. So I think it's quite an interesting case that the baby milk issue is very much about marketing. It's not about not getting products to people. We're not about trying to stop women breast, you know, bottle feed or breastfeed. It's nothing to do with that. So please, whenever you do that. And I, that appealed to me because I, the last thing I wanted ever was to tell people what to do. I'm really not interested in that at all. I'm interested in focusing on the problem and how to solve the problem. And one of the things that stuck in my mind, I think, was hearing somebody say, oh, you can go on fishing people. You see all these people in a river and you pick, you can rescue them and rescue them. You can go on all day. And then only you look up river and see that somebody's throwing them in. So unless you come and do something about the person throwing them into the river, you know, you're really not going to get to the root of the problem. And I think that's what the organisation that I joined, Bademark Action, whatever, is doing. It's getting right to the root of the problem and affecting a multinational in a way by pointing a finger very clearly at it, naming it, monitoring it, being very accurate and persistently monitoring what they're doing and telling the public what's happening. And then through that, exposing what corporations can do and what harm they're doing. And then at the same time, on a dual thing, actually bringing in legislation all over the world to try and stop this type of thing happening, so on a bring about a level playing field, which is what the companies want. So, you know, that it's a dual thing. So it's exposing, monitoring, and going public, and then also working with governments all over the world. And I've done loads of work, and I'll tell you later when it comes up, about trying to bring in legislation here in Europe. I mean, that's a very important thing that Beverly says, most of the problems in the developing world. It's total, that to me is not true. Lots of our comments are about Europe and America and Canada. It's a universal international code that we're talking about that should be a minimum requirement in all countries. So that's a very important issue that all over, and I think to begin with, I didn't realise quite how strongly I felt about that. I think all the focus had been, because of the Nestle boycott, on the developing world. But the problem's certainly not going to be solved unless we see it as a universal issue.
So Patty, although you're based here, you work internationally with your...
Oh, very much so, yes. And I think it's an interesting case to look at in terms of how a network and small groups that are very badly funded. Remember, we have no funding to speak of at all. I mean, like, for the first 5 years, I was completely voluntary. And it was only until about 1985 that we actually got some what I call decent money, where I could, you know, give up teaching, because I was teaching up part-time. And, and in fact, things like the boycott that we ran from 1980 through to 1984, we stopped it in 1984 when we thought Nestle was behaving well, or no, agreed, made a promise to us that they would abide by the code. We had to start it again in 1989. So we've had a break from the boycott when we carried on doing our work and bringing in legislation. But the reason I'm saying that is that period was interestingly when we got most of the money, most established money from aid agencies. So often you'll hear people talking about the baby milk issue as if our whole raison d'etre is the Nestle boycott. And I'm saying, hold on a minute. The Nestle boycott is one small part of our work. We have many, many other areas of work. And in fact, when we do the Nestle boycott, we threaten every single bit of our money, apart from the members' money, because nobody funds the Nestle boycott. So all the monies that we got from the European Union, for example, or Save the Children, or charities, you know, really scary. If you boycott, you're in danger of losing it. So to restart the boycott for us was a huge risk, but we couldn't do it. And so if you want to look at, that is personal, because I couldn't live with myself. I would no sooner not do something like the Nestle boycott, because it threatened our money, then it just made no sense to me, because there's no point in doing the work if you're not going to get to the root of the problem and do what's needed. So yes, I think their personalities do make a difference, and that if you had somebody who was more pragmatic or who felt that their pride in their own success came to being able to say what a big organisation or how much money they've made for organisations. You hear lots of people describe how well somebody has been a director of such and such, and it's grown from a 10 £100,000 thing to a £3 million thing. That is not the terms of reference you'll ever hear anybody in Lone Log Action at all. You know, we know that our total yearly income is probably less than one of the Nestle's adverts. It isn't our independence. It's what we're about and the truth. And if I will never take any money that stops us from saying the truth. So from that perspective, we are making a sort of big claim that we want a different world. We want a world where people matter and that actually the truth matters and that actually corporations are kept in the place that they should be. Profit makers, they generate wealth. There's certain sorts of wealth, but there are other sorts of wealth that are equally important. And breast milk is one of them, and the pollen that grows in the plants and everything else is many different types of wealth, and we shouldn't be measuring everything in terms of economic wealth. So I think that appeals to me greatly, that we should be working towards that. I really identify with actually speaking out, and I cannot bear the thought of ever working anywhere where you couldn't say what you wanted to say. You know, that to me, to have to not be able to say the truth and to have to moderate what I say in any public situation, to me would really be difficult. And so from that perspective, I really, however much anybody wanted to pay me, I couldn't do it. Okay, so
that's a good start. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't know whether it's very logical and ordered, but
okay.
But actually, before one other question that came up was, you saying that moving on to the new, you know, how do we leave behind old histories and move on to this, and this was echoed by a number of people, and it is one of the things that will come up later, I'm sure, this afternoon. But I don't see the world necessarily as a world where we're all going to be working closer together with corporations, which is what I think is behind a lot of the thinking now, that is inevitable, that we will all have to be working as one great happy family. It is not what I think. I think we're going to need more clarity and more distinction between the different agents in civil society, so to make it absolutely clear what different interests there are, because I think that there's a huge danger that we tend to think that it's inevitably got to go that way. So even if I go down die fighting up for that is actually what I think is really important. I don't think we all have the same objectives in mind. Okay.
All right.